Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk.
I'm Amelia Thompson DeVoe.
And this
is Mueller Talk.
Although today's episode is actually going to be more about the other investigations involving President Trump than the Mueller probe itself. Of course, here with me to do that is 538 contributor and legal reporter Amelia Thompson DeVoe. Hey, Amelia, how's it going?
Good. How are you, Galen?
I'm good. So here's the deal, listeners. Since the beginning of the year, Amelia and I have wanted to lay out the landscape of all the different investigations going on and sort of set expectations for what we could learn this year. A lot of other news has gotten in the way of that, and so we're almost at March, but also the word on the street is that the Mueller investigation maybe, possibly, is wrapping up sometime soon. So before that takes over the news cycle, we definitely want to give listeners an overview. The fact is that even when Mueller wraps up his investigation, that won't be the end of Trump's potential legal troubles. According to one tally from Wired reporter Garrett Graff, there are now 18 known investigations relating to Trump or Russia, and only a handful of those involve Mueller. So, Amelia, to give this conversation that we're about to have some context, is there any precedent for the breadth of legal investigations into the president?
So other presidents have definitely had legal troubles during their presidency. Every president going back to Nixon, with the exception of Obama, had at least one special prosecutor, independent counsel investigation. And some of that was for sort of problems within their administration, like potential corruption. But some of it was for personal legal trouble. My favorite is that there was an investigation into potential bookkeeping problems with Jimmy Carter's family peanut warehouse, which ultimately didn't find any criminal wrongdoing. I know. It like seems so quaint now, right? That back in the day, it was like Jimmy Carter's peanut warehouse. Now it's Russia. And then, of course, anyone who lived through the 90s remembers Bill Clinton's legal troubles, which were related to many different things, including Whitewater land deal and sexual harassment. But I think it's probably fair to say that we have never seen anything on this scale, and that's why I'm actually really glad we're getting a chance to sort of talk about some of these other investigations, because there's, in addition to Mueller, which has sort of sucked a lot of the media oxygen, there's just a huge range and a really pretty big scope of investigations into Trump's business, into his campaign, into his inauguration, and then, of course, these questions of his actual behavior as president.
Yeah, so what is the general overview of the different investigations that we're talking about? What are the jurisdictions?
I think we can probably put it in three general buckets. So we have Mueller. And in terms of his jurisdiction, you can tell from the name, he's a special prosecutor. So it's sort of an unusual role. And it's specifically about this situation where there's potential executive branch wrongdoing, and there's this like fear of a conflict of interest. Like, you don't want the people who are investigating potential wrongdoing by the executive branch or the president to be the executive branch or people who were appointed by the president. That raises some potential conflicts. And then in another bucket, we have investigations by federal prosecutors. And we can talk a little more about exactly which federal prosecutors have been most active, but these are separate from Mueller, still looking into potential violations of federal law. And then we have state prosecutors who, of course, are looking into violations of state law.
And these are distinct from any congressional investigations, right?
Yeah. So whatever the Congress is doing is just completely separate. They're not conducting a legal investigation. They are not trying to put people behind bars. It's just, you know, they sort of are obviously investigating similar things, but their goals and methods are really different.
Before we get to the other investigations that we're going to spend most of our time focusing on, let's review a little bit what we've learned from the Mueller investigation. At this point, what has Mueller been able to tell us definitively?
We have learned over the course of many Mueller Fridays together.
Yes, indeed.
That so he's told one big story, which is that Russia intervened in the 2016 election in a bunch of different and really quite invasive and creative ways. And he sort of laid out that story in detail, and it seems like he has a kind of amazing amount of evidence to support that.
He's indicted handfuls of people, right? It's 24 Russians, I think.
Yeah, and like the indictments, those people aren't going to come and stand trial. Their indictments were more an opportunity for Mueller to spell out exactly what he thinks the story is there.
Have we learned anything else definitively other than Russia meddled in the 2016 election?
You know, it'll be interesting to see where we land when the Mueller investigation actually ends, because it's not clear exactly what the big picture is here, or if there is a big picture. But we sort of have this web of criminality in a variety of people who are close to the president. So most recently, Roger Stone was indicted for lying to Congress about contacts with various people about WikiLeaks. Obviously, Paul Manafort has been convicted for a variety of financial crimes, and he's the former Trump campaign chairman. Former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn also pleaded guilty to lying to Congress. And so there's a lot of lying. And it's just not clear at this point if this is just kind of disconnected criminality, or if there's a bigger picture here, if that makes sense.
And so possibly we will learn that when the Mueller report comes out, if it's made public. Now, we have heard some reporting that it is due out as early as next week. I've asked you this question, I don't know how many times at this point, but is there any reason to believe that reporting more than when we heard that the Mueller report was coming out Labor Day or earlier this year?
Yeah. So there has been some information from CNN that actually seems more compelling. I tend to be sort of a skeptic about these reports just because Mueller has kept a really tight operation. We've talked about this. There haven't been many leaks. But CNN has had this sort of stakeout of the Mueller investigation that has actually yielded some interesting insights into what's going on. And so they've seen files being transferred. They've also noticed that some people from Mueller's team are returning to the jobs they had before they were part of the Mueller investigation. Apparently, his grand jury hasn't convened since January when Roger Stone was invited. Also, we now have a new attorney general, and that's very recent. And so, you know, you can imagine that maybe Mueller has sort of been waiting until Bill Barr, who's the new attorney general, was in place before he wanted to wrap things up. That being said, it's harder to say exactly when this will happen. I mean, there have been the reports of as soon as next week. You have to remember that when Mueller finishes his investigation, he's just going to file a confidential report to the attorney general about his decisions to indict or not indict people. And then the Department of Justice has to decide what to do with that.
And is it fair to say, as we move forward in discussing the investigations involving the president, that the special counsel investigation poses the most serious legal threat to the president?
So I think that is a really hard question to answer because the Mueller investigation is not, in fact, over, and we don't know exactly what he's found. You know, if there are bombshell sealed indictments, in theory, there could be more charges. Maybe there's something in the report, if there is a report and it's made public, that's really stunning and damaging to the president. But I have thought for a while that Trump should actually be more worried potentially about some of these other investigations than about the Mueller investigation. And I've thought that in particular about some investigations that have been unfolding in the Southern District of New York.
All right. So let's go in order of seriousness, more or less, for Trump. And you mentioned that you thought some of the more significant risks for the president are coming out of the Southern District of New York. What is going on there?
Yeah, so the Southern District of New York has actually, like, they've been a player for a while because they were the ones who have been going after Michael Cohen for several crimes, including a campaign finance violation for paying off Stormy Daniels during the 2016 campaign to keep her from talking about an affair she'd had with Trump. And they obtained a guilty plea from Cohen last summer. So they've sort of been in the mix for a while, and there's been reporting, Cohen has been sentenced, but there's been reporting that prosecutors in the Southern District of New York are looking into whether Trump Organization executives were somehow involved in that payment. A couple of people close to the president, so Alan Weisselberg, who was the Trump Organization's CFO, and David Pecker, the owner of the company that owns the National Enquirer, have both been granted some form of immunity in that investigation. So, like, that's never good news for you when people who are really close to you are cooperating with prosecutors. And that seems to be ongoing. You know, I think that kind of got downplayed for a while because that's really the closest that we've gotten to the president being implicated in a crime, right? Because the documents that were filed around Cohen's sentencing made it clear that the president had actually directed Cohen to make this illegal payment. So to me, that's evidence this is a pretty serious threat to Trump.
I mean, what makes this just ordinary investigation by federal prosecutors more significant, more of a potential threat than, you know, the president's campaign possibly working with a foreign adversary to win the 2016 election?
Well, I mean, it all depends on what they find. And so that's why I do think I don't want to get over my skis in predicting which investigation is going to be the biggest threat to the president, or if any of them are a threat to the president. But, you know, the other thing that federal prosecutors in the Southern District of New York are looking into is there's a criminal probe into Trump's inaugural committee. And they're looking into a number of things, including possible money laundering, cash for access schemes. There's been some really great reporting by ProPublica on this recently, and it highlighted some possible tax law violations. If the Trump Hotel in D.C. was charging inflated prices for the event space, that could be criminal self-dealing. And so, you know, these smaller crimes, you know, they're not as big and flashy and dramatic, but they're also something that federal prosecutors go after people for routinely. And federal prosecutors really don't like to bring charges unless they have the evidence to see it through and get a conviction. And of course, that doesn't always happen, but like they like to bring make a really strong case. And so we don't know at this point, obviously, what this is going to mean for Trump. But I would say that if a case gets brought against him by federal prosecutors as a result of these investigations, or if a case gets brought, you know, against his children, people close to him, that's really serious. And I think because it hasn't sort of been part of this political frenzy, it's sort of flown under the radar a little bit more. They've been working on this. Michael Cohen's offices got raided last April, I think. So they've been working on this for months, and they may just be waiting until after the Mueller investigation is over to start moving, you know, really moving forward in a public way with this.
So the Southern District of New York is investigating hush money payments to cover up extramarital affairs. They're also investigating any potential wrongdoing relating to President Trump's inaugural committee. Where are we off to next? What is the next most serious investigation at this point?
The state of New York.
So we are staying in New York State, and let's talk about that in just a moment. But first, let me tell you that today's podcast is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is a challenge, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. And that place is ZipRecruiter.com/538. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans through thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience, and it invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this web address. It's ZipRecruiter.com/538. That's ZipRecruiter.com/538. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Upstart. Applying for a loan is a lot like applying for a job that you don't get to interview for. Instead, loan companies make their decisions based off your credit score and history without getting to know the whole you. Now, thanks to Upstart.com, it never has to be that way again. Upstart is revolutionizing the way you borrow money by rewarding you for your job experience and education in the form of a smarter interest rate. Unlike traditional credit underwriting, which could be biased against people with a short credit history, Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. Over 100,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their wedding, or to make large purchases. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. Hurry to upstart.com/politics to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/politics. Let's continue our overview of the legal investigations involving Trump. As we mentioned, we are staying in New York State. What is the state's attorney general looking into?
The first and the really only big thing that the state of New York has done so far is to look into allegations that the Trump Foundation was not operating in, shall we say, an above board way, in the way that charities should really operate. And they started investigating that really late in 2016. So they were working on that for a while, eventually brought a lawsuit against Trump last summer. And they were basically alleging, based on a lot of great reporting that was happening during the campaign and their own investigation, that the Trump Foundation was not giving out money to worthy causes. They were instead paying Trump's legal settlements and buying art for his clubs, including a very expensive portrait of Trump. And they were paying for giveaways at some of his campaign rallies. And none of that is okay if you are a charity. So Trump actually tried to shut down his foundation once he had been elected. And the state of New York basically said, we don't trust you to give away the rest of your money, which is not that much money. I think it's less than $2 million. We don't trust you to do that except under court supervision. And we are going to sue you for restitution for the illegal campaign contributions. And they're also trying to bar Trump and his children from serving on the boards of other charities in New York. So that is mostly ongoing, except the foundation agreed to dissolve under court supervision in December.
New York has been in the news for other reasons lately, right?
Yeah. So the attorney general, the new attorney general, Tish James, ran on a platform of promising to really aggressively go after Trump. I mean, obviously, you know, she has an office now full of career prosecutors who I'm sure do their jobs well, and they're not going to suddenly be like, oh, we're going to go try to get the president. But I do think there's just a potential for them to bring more, to be doing more investigations, particularly because there's a big New York Times expose last fall about, it's like a history of possible tax evasion and fraud by the Trump family that reportedly New York State's tax commission is looking into. And these investigations take a really long time. So I think the fact that we haven't really heard anything about this since the story broke, I don't think we should really read anything into that because it hasn't actually been that much time. But that certainly seems like something that, in theory, New York prosecutors could be investigating.
And why is all of this happening in New York State, in the Southern District, and at the Attorney General's office?
Well, like Trump's a New York guy. He runs his businesses out of New York, his campaign. It's particularly relevant for New York prosecutors because they have jurisdiction. In theory, other attorneys general could be, you know, looking into misconduct by Trump if they have jurisdiction over it. But it makes sense that New York would be the epicenter of this because there was, you know, the epicenter of Trump's life until very recently.
What kind of authority does the Attorney General of New York have that's different from, say, a federal prosecutor associated with a federal court?
There are a couple of things that are relevant in thinking about what this could mean for the president or people close to him. In theory, Mueller could try to charge the president with a crime if he thinks he has the evidence to do that. You know, everyone I've talked to in my reporting about this has said that they just think that's really unlikely, even if Mueller has the evidence, just because there's a Department of Justice policy that says you can't do that. And Mueller is not the type of guy to try to challenge that. There's no guidance keeping the state attorney general or state prosecutors from indicting the president. In theory, that's something they could try. That would absolutely go to court immediately. Not sure how it would turn out, they might still try it. And then there's the fact that, you know, there's all this talk about whether Trump will try to pardon various people who have been swept into the net of the Mueller investigation. And he can't do that for state crimes. So insofar as he wants to keep people out of prison, he can pardon people for federal crimes, and that power is pretty much unlimited, but he doesn't have power over state crimes.
So the Southern District of New York and Mueller, any crimes that they find people guilty of, he could ultimately pardon. Anything that the New York State Attorney General, according to state law, finds in violation, the president can't do anything. It would be up to the governor?
Yeah, it would be up to the governor, and I don't see the governor being interested in pardoning the people who would be relevant here.
All right, so that is a wrap for New York State. Let's move on. Where are we headed next?
Let's talk about emoluments.
Emoluments. That's not a word that I've heard in a while. What exactly is the emoluments clause?
So the emoluments clause of the Constitution basically bars the president and federal officials from taking emoluments, which presumably means sort of payments or gifts from foreign and domestic powers. And historians basically seem to think that this is kind of out of concern that the King of France would give a gift to the president in an effort to curry favor, and we don't want that. Basically, nobody thought about this until now, and so that's why this super novel constitutional question is making its way through the courts.
Where is it in the courts right now?
So there are a few different lawsuits that have been filed against Trump for alleged violations of the Emoluments Clause. The one that's relevant for us is brought against the president by Maryland and D.C., and they are saying basically that Trump's big hotel in D.C. is unfairly competing with the hotels that are in their jurisdiction. And that's because they are saying that all of these different officials from foreign countries are booking rooms at this hotel in an effort to kind of get on the president's good side. This lawsuit actually got pretty far. It got to the discovery phase, and that is when the plaintiffs can ask for a bunch of documents. Maryland and D.C. issued a whole bunch of subpoenas, and then discovery got paused by a federal court, a federal appeals court that is going to hear questions about whether this case should be thrown out in March. So discovery's been paused for now. If it is allowed to continue, they could ask for a lot of information that Trump probably does not want to share. You know, for example, tax records or revenue statements. And I mean, it is limited to Trump properties in their jurisdictions. They can't, like, start asking him about Trump Tower in New York, but it's still a pretty powerful hook to ask for information about the business side of what Trump's been doing since he's been president.
All right, so we've got the Mueller investigation, we have the Southern District of New York, we have the state of New York, we have Maryland and D.C. This week, the New York Times published a lengthy expose that looks at the ways that the president has possibly tried to obstruct justice over the past 2 years or so as all of these different investigations have gone on. So let me ask generally, how has the Trump legal team reacted to all of these different investigations involving the president in some way?
Well, so he's reacted in ways that, like, fuel this idea that he's obstructing justice. And that's sort of the challenge, but it's also, in a weird way, it's a defense for him. Because, you know, one of these, like, one of the big things has been, did he obstruct justice by firing James Comey, the former FBI director? And, you know, Trump does kind of have a defense for that, which is just that he, like, fires people a lot. And it, you know, wasn't about obstructing the investigation. He just wanted to fire Comey. And the fact that all of this is happening out in the open, I think in a weird way has sort of enabled the president's defenders to kind of say, you know, look, this can't be obstruction of justice because it's all, you know, it's all happening right in front of you. And if he were trying to commit a crime, he would be doing it secretly. I don't know if that really makes the case against him less strong, but it's certainly been a way that they've approached it. And they've also, you know, Trump and his defenders have been trying to discredit the Mueller investigation in various ways for a long time. And that's kind of been another strategy that I think that the Times article was saying, you know, this is really more of a PR strategy. You just basically, you know, undermine trust in Mueller such that, you know, whenever he does come out with a finding, if it's bad, people just, you know, might not think it's true.
Who ultimately is it up to decide whether or not the president has obstructed justice in the course of any of these investigations?
There's been reporting that Mueller has been looking into whether Trump obstructed justice specifically in the Russia investigation. That isn't something that, you know, there have been charges for or kind of anything formal that we've seen so far. So, you know, Mueller certainly could maybe in a final report talk about, you know, I thought about bringing charges against the president for obstruction of justice and didn't for these reasons. That's something that could go in the report, you know, even if he thinks he can't charge the president because of this Department of Justice policy about indicting the president. You know, if the Mueller investigation ends and we start to see the president sort of trying to potentially interfere in other investigations, with the, which the Times article actually suggested may have already happened, insofar as the president, according to this report, was trying to get someone he perceived to be more loyal to him, who had recused himself from being in charge of the Cohen investigation, back on top of the Cohen investigation. And that, like, basically wasn't possible because once you've recused yourself, you've recused yourself. And this is all according to the Times. I don't think Mueller is, you know, necessarily sees that as part of his pretty narrow purview. But if this kind of thing continues, in theory, obstruction of justice charges could be brought against him by other prosecutors. But it would really just depend on whether we see this kind of behavior continuing, and also whether prosecutors think that they can actually bring these charges, which it's a pretty high bar for obstruction of justice. So that's a challenge as well.
All right. So a lot to think about there in terms of what happens next, not only in the Mueller investigation. How long do we think these other investigations could go on?
These investigations go pretty slowly. I mean, look, think about the Trump Foundation investigation. New York State started working on that right around when Trump was taking office. They brought their lawsuit about a year and a half later, and it's still ongoing, except for that, you know, the one victory New York State has had in getting the foundation to be dissolved under court supervision. So this moves really slowly. I mean, I think that's one of the things about the Mueller investigation. It's gone really, really fast. And I think that's kind of easy to forget, but, you know, we could easily be talking about the rest of Trump's presidency, just at the rate that investigations go and at the rate that the legal system goes.
So that means almost certainly when we are in the heat of the 2020 campaign.
Yeah. I mean, I just can't imagine these investigations, unless, you know, they find nothing and I guess they close up shop. You know, that's a possibility. But I think the likeliest scenario is that these legal troubles, you know, even if the Mueller investigation wraps next week, the president is going to have other legal troubles hanging over his head for quite some time.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. Thank you for running through all of that with me, Amelia. It sounds like you have got a busy year ahead tracking all of these investigations.
Yes. Yes, I do.
All right. Well, before we go, I have a special announcement to make. We are recording a live podcast in New York on March 20th. It will be at the NYU Skirball Theater, and you can get tickets and more information at 538.com/live. It'll be Nate, Claire, Micah, me. If you've ever wondered what this podcast sounds like before it's edited, this is your opportunity to see it live. So go to 538.com/live. My name is Galen Druk. Vanessa Diaz is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store, or just tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.